Welcome to Theology Thursday, an ecumenical space for students to discuss matters of faith and theology.
I'm your host, Connor Grubbs.
I am your co-host, Ryan Mock.
And I'm your co-co-host, Johnny Grubbs.
Well, gentlemen, Illuminati confirmed.
Oh, no.
So, our subpoint this week, everybody's talking about it right now.
Although I've never heard about this.
Except for Ryan. Apparently Ryan lives under
everybody
a rock,
except for Ryan.
Ryan, are you familiar with the song Old Town Road?
Gonna drive my horse down the old time road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
Nope.
I think I got it a little wrong there.
All right,
but
you guys are done. So,
Whoa.
Why did you do that?
I apologize to all our patrons that you had to experience that.
Only the Patreons.
Only the Patreons. Everybody else.
We don't apologize to them.
It's free. I mean, you get what you pay for. But
okay, so hear me out. The artist who wrote, I don't know if he wrote it, but it's the artist who released the song Old Town Road, Billy Ray Cyrus. Is in the song, but the one I'm talking about is Lil Nas X, is what how I think you say it. So he released that song, it went viral, bunch of TikToks with it. Then he came out and he was making a big deal about how he's the first major queer hip hop artist
who mixes it with country. He's very proud of that as well.
Well, that's the only song he's ever done that on.
Yeah, but he's still proud of that.
Sure. And so.
There's a commercial for Logic products where he says that. He's like, if I follow Logic, I wouldn't mix country and hip-hop and all this kind of stuff.
Great. He's really focused on this Logic
I'm really hyper. I see it all the time. I see Lil Nas X like 3 times a day when I'm like doing school and I have to get those YouTube videos about different things. Yeah.
I haven't gotten that ad. I wonder why.
I wonder why it's my recommended.
What is your algorithm doing?
I don't know. I'm just
saying.
Have
you been listening to Old Town Road?
I have not been listening to Old Town Road. Although my students were really into it when it first came out.
Okay. So he's released a new song. Okay, and we'll talk a little bit about the song. We're going to talk a little bit about the shoe, because the shoe is what really concerns me. He also released a new shoe with Nike.
Like the Travis Scott burger,
but it's a shoe. I don't know if that's a good comparison, but I like it.
No, actually, there's a better comparison, because a couple years ago. We'll get into that in a second. Okay. The song is called Montreal, Call Me By Your Name. And the music video, I haven't watched the whole thing. I've seen clips of it. It was enough for me. Is basically he descends on a stripper pole from heaven down to hell. And he gives Satan a lap dance. So there's a lot of satanic imagery and a lot, you know, of just embracing demonic, like, imagery and themes.
Well, that's fun.
And the song is really about him coming out of the closet. But for some reason, he's decided to pair that up with this satanic imagery.
Well, that's, first of all, not a great look for the LGBTQ community there.
No.
me being gay is now synonymous or at least attached to
Satanism.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of weird. It is weird when we talk about these kind of stories. I always laugh at, and I still don't believe like in the Illuminati, right? But I always laugh at like the Illuminati and these conspiracy theories that like all the entertainment industry sucks you into a vacuum of Satanism, and it's all a ploy and it's controlled by Satan. But when you look at the imagery, and I'm not making a case for it, there is something nefarious probably somewhere in the industry, because I look at the imagery like in Billie Eilish's videos, or you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, here's the thing. Bottom line is, people who get into Hollywood do, a lot of them were going towards like, but the Hollywood and music industry were going towards Satanism, because when they get in there, they're lonely and they're looking for some sort of spiritual power, and it's kind of the religion that, but people within the satanic church also wanted, you know, a lot of celebrities because they're like, it gives us influence. The Church of Scientology went the same route. Now, that doesn't mean I believe in the Illuminati, that every movie that's made is part of some greater plot to, like, mind control us. But it's a fact that a lot of celebrities went that route.
Right. There's a cult There's cults involved there just by default. And that's a good point, too. That
because
like,
cults know that's where they're going to make their money.
Yeah. And it's also good to know that like many Satanists are really humanists, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to add. Most Satanists are actually atheists. They don't even believe in God. It's,
right.
It's more a religion of, you know, just live your best life.
And they use this imagery to insult Christianity and to insult God because they know it's offensive, they know it's sacrilegious, and they don't believe any of it's real, so why not just, you know, throw it out there. You know, a lot of the tagline he's been using on a lot of his marketing stuff recently says, better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven, which implies that people will get to reign in hell.
No, yeah.
In fact, I think that we actually get to reign in the new kingdom with Christ. Yeah. So
actually, the person who's reigning in hell is going to be Jesus. Revelations 10:11-14 says that the Lamb will actually be present in hell. So,
which opens up a whole conversation we won't have right now, but
maybe on the after show. anyway, so here's the more concerning part. This was what really freaked me out. He's also released a shoe to go along with this whole marketing campaign.
One shoe.
With Nike.
To rule them
just
all.
One shoe. Okay, so a couple years ago, Kanye released the Jesus shoe. I don't know if any of you guys remember this.
No. The Jesus shoe?
Yeah.
How did I miss this? I think I remember
it. Was like, it's a very light-colored shoe. It has some Bible verses on it. And it has some sand and some water from Israel in
it. I remember this.
Now, a lot of people thought it was really blasphemous because the idea is that you're walking on water because it's got the water in the bottom of the shoe.
I get it. How much were these shoes?
They were really expensive, like several thousand dollars.
Gotcha.
But all of Kanye's merch was expensive anyway.
Right.
So. I'm just thinking if it's the Jesus shoe and
this was actually like
some G's on it, it's kind of funny.
This was like pre-conversion. Like, I mean, Kanye had a lot of religious imagery throughout his career. So like this was pre
the Chick-fil-A album.
Yeah. Which is a great album, by the way. So I guess Ryan doesn't agree.
No, I enjoyed it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Jesus is King. So, it's a bop.
Yeah, it's a bop. So
closed on Sunday.
Okay, stop.
Yo, my
Chick-fil-A. That's what that face was. You were debating whether you were going to sing it.
All right, the shoe.
So this is kind of a response to the Jesus shoe. It's the Satan shoe.
Right.
And instead of having holy water, that water was blessed by a priest before being put in the shoe. Anyway, instead of having holy water,
it's still going to mold under there.
Okay, in the shoe. This is, this is a lot more concerning. Okay. There is actually in each shoe. And it's a limited series. They're really expensive. They're only making a few. In each shoe, in addition to having a 666 on the side, to having a verse from Luke that talks about Satan falling from heaven, it has that reference. And then it says, So that's just some of the stuff it says. They're red, all this stuff. But in that little rubber compartment underneath, where in the Jesus shoe the holy water would have gone, there is literally a drop of human blood. Now, I'm not sure how that's even legal, first of all.
I thought you were going to say, like, goat blood or something.
No, it's human blood. First of all, I'm not sure how that's even legal, like how they acquired human blood and how they're selling it in Nike shoes.
Whose blood is it?
I haven't gone that deep yet. From what I've looked up, like, nobody really knows, but they do know it's authentic, like, real human blood.
Genuine human blood.
Genuine human blood. So, and my thing is, like, okay, at that point, now we're really into, like, this is satanic. Like, you're literally
absolutely
selling shoes with human blood in it. That's sick. Like, that's really messed up.
Kind of cringe.
So, anyway, I'm not sure why bringing that up other than that. I will say, you know, one of the concerning things is, one of the things he keeps saying lately, even though he posts a lot of vulgar stuff and is very, you know, just kind of all this stuff, just kind of gross, honestly. And again, that has nothing to do with the fact that he's gay. I know a lot of gay people who are not that in your face about it and that inappropriate about it. You know, like, it's not that he, like you said, it makes the LGBT community look bad because they're not all like that, you know. You can't make generalizations about groups of people. Like, that's just, it doesn't work. But he is very like gross about it. Okay. And if he was posting stuff like this and he was straight, it'd still be gross. That's my
point.
You know, but, he's doing this, and then he also said in a recent interview, he's like, my primary audience is children, and I like that.
That's a very disturbing.
So it feels very like a bait and switch, because he pulled all the kids in with this catchy little country rap song, and then now he's like, no, and now they're watching my Satan video.
Yeah.
Now they're watching me give Satan a lap dance.
That's very disturbing.
And wearing blood in their shoes.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, usually I'm not like, oh, Illuminati. But this is legit. Like, stay away from this. This is not good. This is...
I don't know if that's going to show up on recording or not.
There's no debate about, oh, like, is the fictional wizard okay or not? This is like, no, this is bad. Like, just...
Yeah. No, and it's straight up. And I made the comment about humanists, because not all of Satanism cuts, you know, the throat of a goat and does all that stuff. There is a sect of it that does. And I think even if you're in that other boat, it's very easy to be. I mean, if you think about the last line of the Satanic Bible, which is "Do what thou wilt," right? I mean, that can lead down a road of debasedness of like, look at me, I can do whatever. I can put a drop of blood in a shoe. I can do whatever the crap I want. You know, part of my language, but saying crap on air. But I mean, like, that's what it leads to, and that in and of itself is in a way satanic, right? Because
yes,
you know, so
that's what Satan wanted to do. He said, "I'm going to do what I want to do."
Right, exactly. And so I think that that's important to note that it's a slippery slope when you engage in atheism, etc.
That's yes. Our official advice. So I was trying to pull up the question. We have a question here from Thomas, who is a fellow patron. By the way, patrons get first dibs on questions. If you're a patron and you send a question, we're going to answer that before we answer anybody else's question.
Ooh.
We're going to answer everybody's question eventually, but patrons get first dib. And that also is like that corresponds with your tier. Thomas is a tier 3 Patreon, meaning we just shipped out a t-shirt to him. He gets the after show, and he gets the monthly Reading Hour podcast. Pretty good deal. I actually, you know, I haven't broken down the math like this before, but basically what's happening with the merch is tier 3, you're getting 3 new items of merch every year, okay? So that averages out to about $20 a merch item. But you're also getting the shipping covered, and you're getting it a year before it's released to the general public. Just gets automatically shipped straight to your door.
That's a great value.
So we have some masks coming, and we have some mugs coming.
What?
So
I can't wait to get a mug.
I want
to
wear a Theology Thursday mask when I go out. Theology Thursday! And then people ask, like, oh, that's a cool mask. Where do you get it? Oh, it's just our podcast that I'm on. We talk about theology.
You can enjoy it while you can, though, because those vaxes are coming out, man.
Yeah, so we're going to get those out
soon. We have Theology Thursday vaccines.
We need to get those, because I think midsummer nobody's going to be wearing masks.
Wow. You're
going to be blessed
by
a priest.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Thomas's question. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and read the question, and then we're going to answer it.
Okay.
Pretty revolutionary. I'm going to have to lean in a little bit, and my eye's probably going to cross. So if you're watching on YouTube, just don't.
What is the firmament, and where is the water that is above it? How can we reconcile space or the lack of a so-called firmament? So
he references 3 Bible verses.
Oh, okay.
It's not going to hear me.
I was wondering that.
Okay. You're
going
to have to
hear you?
Amplify yourself.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. What is the firmament, and now it's going to be too loud. And what is the firmament, and where is the water above it? How can we reconcile space or the lack of a so-called firmament? So he references 3 Bible verses here that talk about the firmament. Psalm 91:1, which says, heavens and firmament as evidence of God. He didn't copy them.
Do you want me to look them up?
Yeah, let's look them up. So the first one, I'm going to have to do a lot of editing this week.
Psalm 91:1.
He sends three verses. So Psalm 91:1,
which says,
what translation do you have? Because he has KJV on here.
Okay, so that's an important point, and we will make that probably later on. I do have the ESV. So the word
is. We're going to come back around to the KJV, right?
Yes, we will mention the KJV.
Okay, good. He does.
Psalm 91:1 says, "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty." Psalm 91:1, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So it's probably okay. So my ESV, it's probably shelters the word.
I think you need to be in KJV. Let's go and read these in KJV.
Where? I don't think I have KJV. Wait, do I have KJV? Yeah, you're gonna have to edit this.
It's okay. I'm gonna have to edit everything. KJV.
I don't have in my logos downloaded library. Can you look it up?
Yeah, I would love to.
Sorry.
You better be.
Because the KJV uses firmament, while the ESV, particularly in Genesis, uses the word expanse. And I actually believe that the KJV has a better translation. It's more true to the original word, which Johnny will talk about. So I like the KJV's rendering rather than the ESV in this.
All right, this is the KJV, Psalm 91:1?
Yeah.
He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. So
it must have been a typo.
Okay.
Genesis 1:7.
Genesis 1:7. Genesis 1:7 tells us, God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so.
Genesis 7:11.
Genesis.
Oh, thank heaven.
It's Genesis 7:11. Genesis 7:11 says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven, or the firmament, were opened."
Okay, so the firmament is like it's like the ozone layer, and because it's gone now, that's why we get sunburned?
No.
That's what Ken Ham told me.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. All right, and one of my favorite scholars, Old Testament scholars, among many, I don't want to just get all of my thing from one guy, and I also want to...
Yeah, get it from Jesus.
Get it from Jesus, and also, there's a lot of good scholarship. Like, honestly, I think what's really important is that we read the Bible the way that Jesus and then ancient Jews would have done it as well. You know,
scholarship that helps us do that is going to be the most helpful.
Exactly. And so, how would they have read it? How did they understand it? And I think you have to there's even layers to that, because how one audience understood it centuries later to the audience that immediately read the Torah, you know, like right after it was written. But bottom line is, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Genesis 1 is concerned with functional creation, like the functions of each system that God ordered, with the end point being the inauguration of the world as God's cosmic temple in which he dwells with his people. So let's look at the firmament specifically, right? This was the ancient Near Eastern conception of the sky, okay? It's mentioned on day two. And the firmament has a functional existence in the operation of the weather. So what we know about it is that from their perspective, it holds back and occasionally lets through the waters above the firmament. There's a theory based on that verse, which it doesn't really explicitly say that, but the one about how the heavens opened up and it rained, like that was the first time that there was an actual solid thing there, and then it opened up and things started pouring out of it, and that was the first rain. Where did my notes go? But we'll talk more about that in a second as to whether or not that's really the case. Bottom line is, and this is a quote from Walton, which is just true. I mean, when it comes to ancient Near Eastern cosmic geography and cosmology, they were predominantly and primarily thinking metaphysically, and then secondarily, they were thinking physical and material. So their primary thing was metaphysical. You know, it was like their concepts of the world and the way that it worked. It was kind of nebulous, and they only had metaphysical categories for it. So as for the firmament, you know, it seems to be specified that it's unspecified material. And the way that the word works in Hebrew...
Rakia.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a solid thing to it. And this is where people get hung up, because of that solid nature of it, that perhaps it was something that we no longer have. But if you pair that with the fact that they thought metaphysically, maybe, you know, there's evidence to think that maybe they thought it was a window that opened up and closed. You know what I mean? So that's still solid, right? But it opens up to let things pass through. And so, again, they're thinking metaphysically. Many ancient Near Easterns thought it was actually a tent holding water, that it was on poles. And, you know, so there's just all these kind of crazy thoughts that they had with the categories that they had at the time. But, you know.
So, simply put, the firmament could be defined as what we would call today the sky.
Right.
And the ancient Near Easterners, their idea was that this was actually a solid thing.
Yeah.
That encapsulated the earth.
Yeah.
Essentially. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the basic definition. So what do we believe about that today? Do we agree with the ancient Israelites when we come to this text, when it talks about the firmament? Do we believe that it's an actual dome that covers over us, that's solid, you can knock on it, it'll knock back, and the stars and the moon and the sun are imprinted on it? Do we believe that? And so you could probably guess that most Christians today do not believe that it's not an actual physical thing you could touch. So what do we make of it? And in order to answer that question, we have to answer a much broader question. And the question is this: how do we interpret Genesis? Right? Because Genesis, there's some weird and wild things in Genesis, and it could get weird for a lot of people. It could oftentimes be seen as unscientific, very anti-science. So how do we as Christians interpret Genesis? Some people interpret it as a fairy tale. Some people interpret it as 100% historical fact. So what do we think when we come to the text? And I would like to identify five different ways people interpret Genesis. We actually already had an episode on the creation, right? We already talked about this.
Yeah, we kind of debated the various views surrounding.
Yes, and so I'll just go over this quickly. This will be a review. If you want more in depth on this, go see our episode actually on creation. It's actually a pretty recent episode, and I think it's just titled Creation. So, what are the five different ways? How are the five different ways people interpret Genesis? The first two are the first two ways assume that that Genesis is not revealing scientific truth to us. That Genesis was not necessarily written to be a science textbook. So the first one is this: that in Genesis, which is inspired scripture, God communicated to the ancient Israelites in a way that accommodated to their ancient understanding of the natural world. So God communicated these truths to them in a way that would make sense to them. So God wouldn't come down and talk to the Israelites about the Big Bang Theory or evolution or whatnot, because they would have no way of understanding those things. So God, in communicating to them, he communicated in such a way that they could absorb that information. It makes sense to them, using ancient Near Eastern cosmology. Cosmetology is like beauty stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure I get that right. So the second way in which some people interpret the Genesis is they actually interpret it allegorically, meaning they don't necessarily see Genesis as a historical fact, but they glean spiritual truths from the stories. And so we actually see this a lot in the early church, which is probably a surprise to a lot of people. A lot of people probably wouldn't think that the early church would for a large part interpret Genesis allegorically, but we could see that when we read the early church fathers. A great example is St. Augustine. And there's many examples. I'll give one example later of how he does this. But they take certain parts of Genesis, and they look at it from an allegorical lens. So what does this say spiritually? We'll look at that later. So the other two ways in which people interpret Genesis is they interpret it as a science textbook. I'll just, very basically, that's how they would interpret it. That actually, when God communicated to the ancient Israelites, he was actually also communicating scientific truth. Now, today, in American Christianity, most people interpret the Bible this way. And there's two different variations of this. The first way is that Genesis tells the story of creation as essentially the same story as contemporary science, covering about 13.7 billion years. So many people, when they come to Genesis, they see the Genesis story, the creation story, and they say, that's what it is, that's what God's communicating to us, but it's really billions and billions of years long. Those 7 days are not actual seven literal days, but they are in place of just very long periods of time. And so God created the universe over billions and millions of years, and that's what we read when we read Genesis. And then the other way in which people come to the text scientifically is they say, since the Bible says that the universe was created in 6 24-hour days, 6,000 years ago, well, that's what they believe. They say when they come to the text, they see that the earth was created 6,000 years ago, 6 to 10,000 years ago, and was created in 24-hour periods. So the final way in which we could interpret Genesis is we could interpret it, well, literally, quite literally, literally, and meaning when we see the weird and wild things in Genesis, we take it at face value. We interpret it by the plain meaning of it. So, for instance, in the discussion about the firmament, we believe we would actually interpret that as an actual dome that covers our Earth. So those are five different ways people interpret Genesis. Any other input before I continue?
Well, I would say that for me, like I sort of take the first view with a caveat, you know, that there's also different theories too, by the way, surrounding, because it's hard to get around the 24-hour period thing. Mm-hmm. When you look at the original Hebrew. But if you think of creation in terms of a functional story, you could say, well, this was the 24-hour period in which the cosmos came into function, you know, where the land and sea were finally divided. That was the day. So it could be seven literal days spread out over a longer period of time. That's a little bit of a side note. But I really do believe that it wasn't that God communicated this to the Israelites simply because it was the only way they would understand it. I think that God communicated this to the Israelites in a way that they would understand, and that was in keeping with a lot of the creation literature of the time, because there were other, you know, pagan societies creating these things as well, you know, these creation epics. It was supposed to kind of be a parallel to that, for one thing. But I also think if you really study it, what's really cool is it is timeless, the way that it works, that it fully supports what Scripture is trying to do, which is tell a unified story that leads to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was intentional that God wrote this into an ancient Near Eastern context, and those things didn't matter yet. You know, mm-hmm. the scientific, those things didn't matter yet. So that now here, thousands of years later, what really matters is that God ordered something into a functional, beautiful system where he could dwell and dwell with his people. That's timeless. You know, like it doesn't matter if you believe that, you know what I mean? Like yeah. there's a spiritual reality there that, mm-hmm. that is timeless. So,
yeah. So, just a disclaimer, me, Johnny, Connor, and myself, we disagree on how old the universe is. We've talked about this before. We're not going to talk
about it.
We're not going to talk about it today. Okay. But despite the fact that we disagree on how old the universe is, we all agree on how we should interpret Genesis. And so we all believe, and Connor, I'm speaking for you all when I say this, we believe that we should interpret Genesis as it was interpreted by the ancient Israelites.
Yeah.
Wrong.
The original readers of the Torah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Connor.
No, I agree.
Okay, good. Yeah. So, So yeah, we don't view Genesis 1 as a science textbook. So when we come to Genesis 1, we don't say, okay, this is the Bible saying that the earth is 6 to 10,000 years old, or we're not saying that this is the Bible saying that the earth is billions of years old. We're not trying to input our modern scientific notions into this text. Okay? We don't want to do that.
Those things, and this is a hot take for a lot of evangelicals, those things are extra biblical. That is not part of the text.
And neither are we saying that Genesis 1 is all allegorical.
Right.
Right. So we believe these things actually did happen. We believe that God created the heavens and the earth, and Adam was a real person. We affirm the historical reality of Adam and Eve and all the other Genesis characters. And so we don't deny that either. We see it as historical reality. So we do interpret Genesis 1 as it was intended to be interpreted by the author, and how it was intended to be interpreted by the original audience, right? So that means when we look at Genesis 1, we're looking for theological truths. We're not looking for scientific statements. We're looking for theological truths. So not okay, the earth is this many years old. We're actually looking for, what does this say about God? What are the theological truths we see in here about God? And by and large, those truths have to do with the fact that God is creator, God is supreme over all things, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll make this point again when we actually talk about the firmament. So with that being said, with our understanding of Genesis 1, what do we believe about I'm still speaking for you all, so you all could disagree with me at any point where I start talking, but what do we believe about the firmament? So, what do other people believe about the firmament? Some people take this quite literally, right? It's an actual dome. Those are the people who interpret Genesis 1 literally, the very plain meaning of the word. The earth actually has a dome around it. We don't believe that. Okay.
Speak for yourself. No, that's ridiculous.
So number two, people try and rationalize the firmament by injecting a modern scientific notion into this idea of a firmament. So two examples, for the old earth creationists, they would say that on day two of creation, when God separated the sky from the waters, it was actually over a 4 billion year period in which the universe was expanding. And the earth was in its earliest state of formation, and it was a molten surface, and there's no liquid water on the earth, and you couldn't see the sun and the moon and the stars because the atmosphere is so thick. And so that's what an old earth creationist might say about the firmament, that it was just, man, the sky was so dusty that it was like a dome around the earth. We deny that, I think.
Yes, because it would be silly to try to create a scientific explanation for something that the ancient Near Eastern they described it that way because they didn't understand.
Right.
So anyway.
So the other scientific way in which people try and rationalize it is they say that actually it was a thick level of water in the atmosphere. Really, you think of it, some people call it like the water canopy. This is generally in view with 6-day, 24-hour creationists, young earth creationists. They say there was actually a thick level of water in the atmosphere, and it descended for the flood. I deny this view, too, that that's what the firmament's talking about. I don't know if you guys disagree with that. You might.
No, I think the firmament was the sky. I mean, yeah. And I don't know when the water cycle started or when it was necessary or how ecosystems developed. We weren't there for that. Yeah. But I mean, I just think they didn't understand how rain got through the sky. I mean, they could only look up at the sky, right? So, I mean, got through, I say in air quotes, if you're listening, I'm putting air quotes in the air because there was nothing for it to get through. But I mean, if we look at the sky, it kind of looks solid. I mean, you know what I mean? Like it was just their best guess. It was an ancient Near Eastern perception of what the sky was. That's my view.
So if you were to interpret it allegorically, like maybe some of the early church fathers, maybe you would see the firmament as an allegory, as Augustine did, as an allegory for God's authority over Christians. So this is what Augustine said, that the Bible is like a firmament over our lives. It's nice, you know. Yeah. I don't think that's what the firmament
is. Sermon illustration,
referring.
I guess.
Yeah,
but.
Basically.
It doesn't actually make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't get it.
Ultimately, we love the early church fathers. Sometimes it didn't really make a lot of sense, not going to lie. So cool. I'm not following the whole allegory there. But, so the final view, which is I think what me and the Grubbs brothers believe, is that the firmament just refers to the sky.
Are we an echo chamber?
Yes, we're an echo chamber.
No, we disagree on some things.
Sometimes, to be honest with you, I still actually kind of adhere to the young earth creationist view that there was this sort of water canopy that dropped during the flood. But I also hadn't heard this kind of explanation of it before. So I think that's interesting. And it could be either one, really.
Here's the problem I'll say with young earth creationism in this respect. Young earth creationists try and claim that they are holding to the literal interpretation of Scripture. But if they really wanted to be literal in their interpretation of Scripture, quote-unquote literal, they would believe it's not actually a canopy of water. They would believe it's an actual solid, you know?
And also, too, I mean, you can't claim that from a modern perspective. If you're trying to marry the Bible and science, you're already committing eisegesis.
Yes.
So,
right.
There's
and
no
for
room.
Me, it never had to do with trying to make it work with science. To me, it just hearing that always made sense because of the flood. I mean, you think the whole earth, it's raining for 40 days and 40 nights. That's a lot of water.
But the flip
where does it come from?
For me, it's that sounds like that could work. Maybe that's what happened.
We could also talk about the flood, though, on another time, because you have to understand, they had started, with Cain and Abel, and there's some these are hot takes, arguments to say there were other families that existed post-creation, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Sure.
And so you get there and you start to realize that they're writing this text about the known world.
Yes.
So the flood being a worldwide event, and this is where I get in a lot of trouble.
You gotta be careful with your words here.
I know.
Well, and how far had humanity spread at that
That's
point?
What I'm saying. I don't think that the flood covered... I'm just going to say it on air. Here we go. I don't think the flood covered the entire globe.
However, when you say that, I think an important caveat is that it still affected all living kind.
Exactly. Of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's still, yes.
Yeah, because as long as we're acknowledging that, then I don't think any of the point of that story is compromised, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Because God's judgment still went out on all mankind.
Yeah. So moving on, we have some disagreements here, but we all agree that when it talks about in Genesis 1 about how God created the firmament, we know that generally we're really looking for the theological truth here.
Right,
you know?
Right. And that's my question, because you mentioned earlier, my thing is we may not totally, I may still kind of be on the fence about some of this, but what does any of this have to do with God?
Okay, so I would say this, and this is also in line with interpretation for the rest of Genesis 1, not just the firmament. This teaches us particularly that God was in the work of creating something that was habitable for man, and that involved a whole process in creation. So we think of the water cycle. God created the world in such a way that these processes would work together to make life sustainable. So we think about the weather. God created the weather, you know. So what does this particularly teach us about God is that he is God over the weather. Now, that seems obvious to us because we're 21st century Christians, and Christianity has been around for 2,000 years and has been the majority in the West for hundreds of years. But put yourselves in the shoes of the ancient Israelites. They're surrounded by a multiple polytheistic nations and tribes. And all of these tribes are teaching different things about their gods and about how the sun is a god and the sky is a god and the moon and the rain are gods. Yeah. But what we see established in Genesis 1 is that those aren't gods. Those are actually created things. The weather is a created process by one God.
Right.
And that's the takeaway here.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things that you can take away from Genesis is that, and that's what I was getting at earlier when I said it kind of stood among a bunch of literature of the same type, but it was totally different in the way that it approached that very same topic. So if you look at Babylonian epics about creation and then you hold it next to Genesis, it's like an antithesis to everything that this other book is saying. It's saying, no, that's not what you worship. You worship the maker of that. And yeah. So to mention things like the firmament, the sky, whatever you want to call it, yeah, it was very intentional to say God created these things, not the other way around.
Right. And I think one of the practical applications of that today, I think it's easy to read that and be like, oh, I don't worship the sun. Of course I don't worship a cow. Like, that's bizarre. Like, of course I don't worship like a golden statue. But whatever it is that we, attribute the most worth to in our life is the thing we worship. And humanity throughout history and still today often does choose to worship the creation rather than the creator. We often make what God has created and given us, and we pervert it for our own purposes, and we make it our God instead of him. So it may seem like, oh, well, I don't worship a sun God. Of course I don't. That's dumb. There is still practical application here.
This message is totally irrelevant. If you look at Gen Z and Zillennials right now, what's on the rise is actually astrology. It's a really big thing coming back among them because they're tired of the postmodern movement, but they also want some spirituality in their life, and astrology is one of the big things coming out. And it's like, wait a second, we go back to this text here. It's like one of the only texts that stands alone to tell us, a spiritual text that says, no, these are just created things. There's a creator above it, So anyway, it's interesting. It is still super relevant. And again, helps facilitate the continued story of the Bible that leads to Jesus too, to establish him as God.
So in conclusion, because I said a lot of words and I kind of rambled a little bit, just to conclude, what do we believe about the firmament? We believe that it's the sky. We don't believe that it's an actual dome, but it's just the sky. The ancient Israelites believed that it was an actual dome. But when we go to Genesis 1, we're not looking for scientific truths. We're looking for theological truths. And what was the theology that would have been gleaned from this passage for the ancient Israelites? God is the creator. There you go.
Fantastic. Well, there's your weekly host of...
weekly...
There's your weekly dose of heresy. Ryan, go ahead.
Yahit.